Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Rolling. Okay, everybody, welcome to the latest episode of All Too Real 2. My name is Michael E. Cullen II, and with me, as always, via Zoom, is...
It's Matthew Barton.
Okay.
Yep.
Matthew Barton.
I'm the next Hawkeye.
Okay, so, speaking of which,
I used archery when I was a kid, so you know.
But speaking of which, okay, so I tuned into the show, and I'm like sitting here thinking, and I'm like, where is Alan Alda?
Well, it's not that Hawkeye.
Oh, okay. I got confused.
No, it's not Alan Alda as an archer and as an Avenger. No, that would be.
I thought maybe that was what, you know, Hawkeye Pierce did after the Korean War. You know, he went home and became an archer.
Dude, that would be a cool sketch of Alan Alda as one of the Avengers as Hawkeye. That would be so weird.
So this has nothing to do with MASH, then. Okay.
Well, he does make a good martini, and then in Avengers Age of Ultron, Natasha is making drinks, so they could have just put him back there making his famous martini.
Yeah.
And that would have been a cool little reference, like a MASH Avengers crossover thing going on.
It would be a mashup.
Oh, and crossover, because it was a Korean War, and Falcon and Winter Soldier, we hear about Bucky, that he was in North Korea during the war, and he fought against...
And they're using a crossbow.
Yeah. And that's like Christianity or something like that. And then
So anyways, in all seriousness, today we are covering the first two episodes of the Disney Plus television series Hawkeye, which is a continuation of the story about Clint Barton, who is one of the original Avengers in the Avengers movies. They released two episodes on the first day on November 24th. So we have two to talk about here, Matt.
Yeah, just like with WandaVision. I think that WandaVision is still my favorite so far, but I think this one's second place now, to be honest. I really do.
Yeah.
For me.
My favorite is actually Loki, but I do like WandaVision a lot too, but it's kind of hard. I mean, I like them all. Probably Falcon and Winter Soldier is my least favorite, but I do love elements of it, and I thought it could have been better though. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting. But I did really enjoy these two episodes that we watched. So the first episode that they premiered was called Never Meet Your Heroes, directed by Rhys Thomas and written by Jonathan Igla? I don't know. Igla? IGLA. So I'm not sure how you pronounce that, and I'm sorry, Jonathan, if that is how you pronounce your first name, too. I don't know. Maybe it's not Jonathan, even though it's spelled J-O-N-A-T-H-A again.
It's probably Jonathan.
Yes. I'm just joking. So this TV show, how does it start out, Matt, here? We start out in 2012, and what happens there?
Yeah, it's, this family lives, like, in a penthouse apartment, and the parents are arguing about money, the husband, was just saying the market's a little bit crazy right now, but once things get set up straight, they'll be able to hold on or whatever. And she wants them, to sell the apartment. And she kind of makes a point about how, he grew up wealthy, so he just assumes things will work themselves out. But she didn't grow up that way, so she kind of has a different perspective about well, sometimes you need to seize an opportunity when you have one, because it might not just quote fall out of the sky. That was her phrase. and then young Kate Bishop, she's eavesdropping from her bedroom into the vent overhearing, and she ends up dropping something so they know that she's listening. So then the dad goes to talk to her and tells her everything's gonna be okay, and he's gonna protect her, and then he's gonna go downstairs to his office to do some work or whatever. And then she's eating lunch with her mom, and her mom does this really cool food trick where she knocks the food up and eats, which is really dangerous, by the way. Don't try that at home. Don't try to throw food in your mouth. That's really never a good idea, but that's what she does. And then she tells Kate to go grab Checker. It was interesting, because it's like a rich family, right?
Yeah.
You pretty much probably have anything you want, entertainment-wise. She tells her to grab Checkers. I wonder if there's some kind of symbolism for that later on in the show. I'm not sure. But tells her to grab the Checkers board and to play it, and she says, I'll be downstairs. And then you see, this Chitauri, fly right by the window for, a split second, and then she kind of looks around and wasn't sure what happens, and then she hears a bunch of more noises and explosions and stuff like that. And then she sees one of those big spaceships flying over their ceiling window. And followed by more explosions and freaking out. Then suddenly there's a big crash, one of the windows gets broken open, and then she sees Chitauri flying towards her, about to kill her, and then all of a sudden an arrow gets shot at it, and it explodes. And then she sees Clint. Clint was the one that's literally saved your life right there. And then she sees him kicking a Chitauri off the building. And then he does that really cool scene where he falls off the roof and shoots an arrow to crash through a window for a safe landing. So right then and there, we already see the beginnings of Kate's entire personality, developing right there, seeing someone who literally just saved her life during a huge invasion.
That's basically the beginning, a huge influence on her life too.
And then unfortunately her dad died because the house, their penthouse, by the way, they lived right across from Stark Tower, which is a interesting, not really close, but that you could see that from their window.
It's visible from their apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Then we get so this happens and her father dies in the situation. Because the Chitauri are, destroying buildings and things of that nature. So we find out that her dad died, and we have a funeral for him.
Mm-hmm.
At which point, her mom says that she can. Her mom tells her basically that she can have whatever she wants or whatever, and she asks for, a bow and arrow and lessons.
Yeah.
So then we have kind of a backstory of Kate Bishop told through animation that is very influenced by the Matt Fraction, David Aja, Hawkeye series of comic books. So basically what, that which influenced a lot of the things in this story. Basically, it's not a one for one, remake of the comic books, but it's very influenced by it. And so we get Kate Bishop's story told through the opening credits, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that was a really unique way of doing it. Like, you see her growing up and, like, winning, like, awards and, like, basically her learning how to shoot the arrow correctly. Like, a lot of the beginning, she wasn't hitting the bullseye or even the actual target at all. And which is interesting because a lot of times her mom is, like, standing, like, right behind her, like, almost overseeing her.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was an implication if she's, like, one of these, like, moms who's, like, really, really, like, wanting, almost, like, pressuring their child to, like, be really great, or if she's overseeing her just because,
you know. Like a stereotypical stage mom or something.
Yeah, or she's, maybe she's being supportive, you know, I don't know. But, like, and she's taking martial arts classes. She got a black belt at one point. She does gymnastics. Swords, they show us sword fencing. So basically, she's learning how to become like a fighter because she wants to protect her mom. Like, she, that's like her job in her mind or whatever.
Yeah, and her mom is named Eleanor Bishop and is played by Vera Farmiga, who people may know from Bates Motel, which is what I know her most from, as Norma Bates, which she is amazing in that show. She was recently in that Sopranos movie that they came out with, that Many Saints of New York. I'm not a Sopranos guy yet. I might start watching that show because I'm way behind, obviously. I've never seen it, so.
I've only saw, like, the first two episodes.
Yeah.
When it came out.
But, I might watch it eventually, but yeah, her mom is played by her, and then her dad, Derek Bishop, is played by Brian Darcy James, who is a really well-known Broadway actor and done a lot of movies, including he was in Spotlight movie that was out a few years ago about the Boston newspaper investigating the Catholic Church.
Oh.
Yeah, which, if you have not seen Spotlight, watch it.
No, I have not.
Oh, watch it. It is a brilliant movie. Anyway, so he's in that as well. But anyways, so that's the actors there. We have Kate Bishop, you know, we've got her younger, but when we meet her as an adult, she's played by Hailee Steinfeld, who is great actress. Anyways, so what happens after the credits there, Matt?
So we come to Clint and his kids are watching Rogers the Musical, and oh boy,
yeah.
Was that a bad play. it's like they keep doing the refrain, I could do this all day.
Oh, yeah, man. And we're singing, like, the person that's singing most of it at the beginning is Adam Pascal, who I've met.
Yeah,
yeah,
that guy's awesome.
From Rent and School of Rock and SLC Punk and Punk's Dead, among other things. He's an amazing actor. He did, however, refuse to be on our show when I asked him to be on it. At least he got back to me, though. He just said he was too busy. So I wanted to interview him so badly. But if you're listening to this by any reason, Adam, please do our show sometime. I'd love to interview you. So, big fan. I met you by a dumpster once, remember?
Whoa.
I did.
It's like a drug deal. I met you by a dumpster.
No, I went to he was doing a tour and he came to Toledo. It was sad. There was like hardly anybody there.
Oh, man.
It was like, I mean, there was maybe like 30 or 40 people in the audience, I think. And it was a pretty decent sized venue. So I don't know if it was even that many. I'm not sure how many, but it was kind of sad. But it was him and a piano player, and he was just singing a lot of different songs, and he was great. And I was like right there in the front row, and then afterwards I met him outside the stage. And for some odd reason, where the stage empties out is right by a fucking dumpster at this place. And wow. I'm not going to mention the place because I don't want to badmouth them because I love the theater, but fuck.
Yeah. I guess people just don't like art in Toledo, I guess. You know?
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, but I saw him on Broadway twice in Rent, so good guy. And most of the other people in there, I don't know off the top of my head all the other actors, but everybody in the show, Rogers, were Broadway actors.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
But it was just a bad musical. Like, I mean, just.
And there's like. Bad. It's like it's like a retelling of the Battle of New York, which we had just seen parts of from a different point of view, which I thought was kind of cool when we saw it from Kate Bishop's point of view as a child.
Exactly, because yeah, especially seeing the ship like over the ceiling window, yeah. Like that was like, and also too, that was a one take shot of that, like what do you call it,
like a continuous shot?
Yeah, they didn't like edit it. That was just nice. Like a one. Yeah, that's what made it kind of have that kind of interesting perspective on it or whatever. And at one point, Clint sort of has a PTSD moment when they show Black Widow. And it actually, yeah. For a second, actually looked like I don't think it was, but she looked a lot like Scarlett Johansson. Yeah. Like it was like he was seeing her. Like
it's just so it's just so funny because you juxtapose that with like the realism of how this affects the citizens of New York. And then you have this cheesy fucking musical right after it.
I mean, it's just like, yeah, I know. He at one point he's kind of having like a PTSD moment when he sees her, and then he turns off his hearing aid because he's deaf, which is interesting. Because I guess in the comic books he was deaf or hard of hearing, and they never really talked about that in the movie until now, I guess. You know, from all the explosions. Well,
they explained it in the second episode, which we'll get to.
Oh, okay. Kinda. Yeah.
But he starts, you know, criticizing things like Ant-Man wasn't there.
Right, exactly. He didn't show up until Civil War.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as part of the Avengers issue or whatever.
But I thought it was kind of interesting, too, because it could just be them putting him there because he was kind of there when they went back in time.
Oh, I mean, he wasn't part of the battle though, but yeah, he was there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe because he was in Endgame and they knew that he was part of the battle for the Battle of Earth, I think is what it's called.
Yeah. But it's also like the whole thing also, it could be a throwback to the fact that it's been revealed in like there's a book that came out recently. Forgive me, I don't know the name of it, but it's all about the history of the MCU that was actually, you know, sanctioned by Disney. So of course it's not going to have all the details of everything and all the dirty details, I should say, you know, but,
yeah,
they do mention that they were originally hoping to have Ant-Man and the Wasp in the original Avengers movie, but they couldn't figure it out story wise to get them in there yet. So, yeah.
And then, and there's this really sad scene where, you know, right as he's having, like, this sort of, like, PTSD moment, he ends up looking over and there's a little girl who's dressed up as Black Widow and she's, like, smiling at him, so it probably just made him feel even worse, like,
yeah. You know? And so he goes outside to get some fresh air, and then one by one his kids come out. And ask him, you know, what's up. By the way, I'm not sure which kid it is. Let me see here. So Lila Barton is played by Ava Russo, who is the daughter of director Joe Russo, who co-directed with his brother the Infinity War and Endgame, among other movies. He put her in those movies, and now she's part of the MCU because of it. So it's like she was kind of like a cameo thing where he put her in there as Clint's daughter, and now she's on a TV series because of it. I mean, I'm not sure if she wanted to be an actress or not, but she's a good actress. So
No, she is. She's pretty good.
Yeah.
And when they filmed this, because she doesn't look that much older, and Endgame was like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Like,
they just filmed this recently, so.
Okay, I was wondering, because because the other kid, he looks like he's grown a whole bunch, though. The taller one. I forgot his name. What's his name?
I don't know. I'd have to
look. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
Sorry, you're not important.
No, I mean, it's okay. Ava Russo is 20 years old right now. So it might just be that, you know, at the time, you know, when you don't really age much from like 17 to 20, you know what I mean?
Right, it's more of like when you're young, you get that like huge growth spurt or whatever type of thing going on. Yeah, I was just wondering. That's all, if they filmed it like, was Hawkeye supposed to come out before? Like, I know they like did the timeline different. Like, shows were released like in different orders.
Yeah, like, Falcon and Winter Soldier was supposed to come out first. Okay, I think Hawkeye was always planned to be like now. So
okay,
because they wanted to release it around the holidays because of it being a Christmas based television series.
Right, okay.
So we have, so anyways, we've got them outside. They end up going to dinner instead of watching the second half of the musical.
Good.
Yes. And it's funny, too, I guess the theater that this was playing at is actually across the street from the theater where Hamilton plays. Which is kind of interesting, because this was obviously kind of inspired by Hamilton in a way, but
With the yellow background and like,
and nowhere near as good though, of course. But the music was written. The music was written by Mark Shaiman, who is a really well renowned lyricist and composer of Broadway shows and movies and things of that nature. So, yeah, he did write all the music, I believe, for the South Park movie.
Wow.
But if I'm remembering correctly, I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, just ignore me.
You are ignored. No.
So what happens? They go to dinner next.
Mm-hmm.
And have their little family time together. Towards the end of the dinner, the meal's comped by the frickin' restaurant, so he doesn't have to pay for it because of, as a thank you for saving the world.
Right.
Which is kind of awkward to Bart. Martin. Yeah.
He doesn't like that. He's not really not comfortable with that. Yeah, I wouldn't be either. I would be like, no.
I forgot, too. There was a scene before he went outside where he was in the restroom at the theater.
Oh, yeah.
And first he sees this, he sees this graffiti written on some porcelain there that says, Thanos was right.
Yeah.
I was listening to some other podcast talking about this, and they were trying to compare it, which I kind of understand, too, in a way to the way that, Vietnam vets probably felt when they came home from the Vietnam War and were basically treated like shit, you know? Like, they went off to fight, and then they came back and were kind of treated like shit, you know what I mean? Not it's not like a one-for-one comparison, but it does got a similar kind of vibe to it where, you know, it's like, there are different points of view on the situation, you know?
Yeah.
Where if you were a soldier, you may have felt what you were doing was right, or you may have felt what you were doing was wrong, but either way, you're being treated like shit, you know?
Yeah, by some people, yeah.
Yeah, not everybody. This isn't everybody either, but you know what I mean? It's like some people felt that Thanos was right, and some people thought that he was wrong. Same thing about the Vietnam War. Some people thought that the, you know, soldiers, but the thing is, the soldiers were just doing what they were told. It wasn't, you know what I mean? You can't really, especially the drafted ones.
Just following orders. No.
Yeah. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They can't help if they're drafted into the fucking war, you know?
Yeah. There for a split second, it looked like Clint like almost like considered it too. He just like shrugs.
Yeah, he's like, maybe he was.
He's like, I don't know, maybe. Yeah,
which is kind of funny.
Got dragged back. And,
but yeah. While he's in there, some guy comes in and is like bugging him at the urinal or something.
Yeah.
Or no, yeah. Was it at the urinal or when he was washing his hands? I don't think it was at the urinal. Maybe.
No, well, it was at the urinal when he's like, it would be really cool if I got a selfie or whatever. Yeah. Rad or whatever. I don't know what he said. And he's like, it's really not an appropriate time right now. And then like, he's washed his hand. The guy just stands. He's like, is that a better time? I'm like, oh, man. Like,
and I mean, that's really, you know, indicative of people that don't understand privacy and personal space when it comes to celebrities too, you know. It's kind of a because I mean I've heard several stories about people who have been at dinner and with their family and people come up and just won't leave them the fuck alone.
It's one of the downsides of being rich and famous. It's like, yeah, you got all this money in the world and you don't really have to worry about like healthcare and food and housing and all that stuff, but every time you go out in public, you're never really going to have any privacy, like, ever.
It's like, you know, if you're like Jeremy Renner in real life, you know, you can't really go to Walmart, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Because he's been in a bunch of stuff outside of the Avenger film.
So, him or any of the people in the Avengers movies, you know, you couldn't go to Walmart or McDonald's or something and expect to not be, you know, hounded. Which kind of sucks, man. You couldn't do just regular shit, you know?
Wasn't he also in that movie? Was the Mad Max? Was he in that?
No.
That wasn't him? Okay.
No, that was Tom Hardy.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. He was in the Bourne Legacy. He was in a couple of the Mission Impossible movies. He was actually being groomed to take over for Tom Cruise, but then he might be coming back for a future one. But he was unable to appear in one of them because of the Avengers movies. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but they were originally grooming him to be the new Tom Cruise, which is kind of weird because he's not really much younger than Tom Cruise. Not the new Tom Cruise, but the new lead of the movies. And I'm just like, yeah, but you're...
like 2 years younger.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I like him as an actor. He's got some, you know, we're not going to get into that on here, but there's like some personal issues that I guess he's had with some women and stuff that, whatever. Rumors, at least. Yeah.
Don't tell me the personal shit about my heroes.
No. Yes. No, I'm just saying, I don't want to get into it on this because we're just going to look at his acting here. He's a really good actor. Anyways, what happens next after that, after the dinner?
We get that scene, you know, he turns off his hearing aid, you know, because of all that. And then they go and they're going to do like, everything they want to do for Christmas, they want to have a movie marathon, they want to do this and stuff. So then we get a thing to Kate, and Kate's with her friends from like the archery team from like, I guess, the college they go to or whatever. And like they have a bet where she can't shoot an arrow and get the bell to ring from Stane Tower,
which is named after Obadiah Stane from Iron Man.
Yeah, so, and she's like, well, a bet's a bet, because they're like, you're definitely going to get kicked off the archery team if you mess this up or whatever. So at first, they're arguing of whether or not to actually hit the bell itself, or the rope, or what they say was the wrap-around thingy, or dangly thingy, was what she said. And they said, no, hit the bell, so she hits the bell, and it just, like, makes this little, like, tiny little, like, clanky sound, like, nothing, you know, and she's like, oh, I guess I was wrong, so then she hits the dangly thingy, and they have the rope, and then it makes the bell go down, but then there's, like, a little crack, and she's like, oh, that's probably okay, you know, most, that's probably nothing, and, like, a little crack some more, and she's like, Well, you know, most of the bells of the character have cracks in them, and then it just like just starts falling. Of like the tower itself is like crumbling. And she's like, that's bad. And then you know her friends run away, and then like you know security guard, you know, catches her off the roof, and it's like, hey guys, how you doing? And then like the entire tower just completely crumbles.
Yeah, and it's really interesting too because it's named after Obadiah Stane, who you know people are. Some people were wondering why would they have a bad guy's name still on a tower? Well, the Avengers covered up all of his bad doing.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, like Tony and everybody covered up his bad doing because they didn't want it to look bad for Stark Industries.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
So, anyways, even though he's, you know, like a war criminal and stuff, but
tried to kill Tony.
Yeah, tried to kill Tony, obviously. But the other interesting thing there is because Haley Steinfeld, who plays Kate Bishop, her first big movie was True Grit, co-starring Jeff Bridges, who played Obadiah Stane.
interesting.
So it's interesting that they chose that name as what would be the name on the tower. It's got to be a nod to that, you know.
There's lots of that, I think, in this episode, or at least in the next one, too.
Yeah.
Little things like that.
So, so she basically ends up going home now after that because of the whole, you know, destroying one of the buildings on campus sort of thing.
yeah, I'm pretty sure that's a expellable offense.
Yeah. I mean, I only destroyed three when I went to the University of Toledo, but they never found out. That's why I still, you know, I'm joking.
Now you just said it though, so.
Oh, shit. I didn't say what buildings.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
They might not even exist anymore, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. So.
They never existed.
Well, yeah.
Or maybe they did.
Maybe we'll never know, so...
Maybe it's a Mandela effect. Oh, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so...
or the Mandela effect. You pronounce it different, too. It's like, oh, is the Mandela or the Mandela?
Yeah, it's Mandela.
Don't know.
Because it's named after...
No, I know. I'm saying if in one timeline, it's the Mandela because they live in a different timeline. And, you know... I don't. It was a bad joke.
I got you. I got you now. I'm sorry. I ruined your joke. So
I ruined it by telling it. So
I ruined it by telling it.
Yeah.
Oh God. So so anyways, she comes back home and is there with Eleanor, her mom, and Eleanor has a boyfriend named Jack Duquesne, who is, in the comic books, what is his name?
It's like the French version, Jacques Duquesne.
Yeah.
You know, spelled.
But no, what is his, alter ego's name?
Oh, sorry. His swordsman is his
swordsman.
Name.
Okay, cool. Yeah. That's what I was trying to remember. I wanted to say archer, and I'm like, that's not right. He's a swordsman, not an archer.
He's I guess they're doing the whole DC thing with Marvel at that point, where they just make very literal names of the characters.
Yeah.
Swordsman, because he's good with the sword. So, we'll just call him Swordsman, you know? Or like, but it's interesting, because some of the, in the comics, he's the one that actually trained Clint in, like, fighting, like, archery and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I wonder if any of that's going to come up at all in this.
Maybe it might. We don't really know much about Clint, like his past. Like,
yeah, we don't. You know,
so.
He seems like a smarmy kind of bad guy. Just off the bat, because he's got a mustache, and you know, people with mustaches are evil. And
he does have that kind of weird mustache. Yeah.
there's a big like gala going on, a charity auction gala that that her mother insists that she goes to and tells her to wear this nice red dress. But she ends up coming dressed in like a black, all black tuxedo type thing.
Yeah.
Where she looks just like the help.
Which is oddly convenient.
Yeah. yeah, kind of very interesting. It's a TV convenience, as I like to call it, TV convenience. So while she's there, she runs into this guy who is the uncle of Jack, named Armand Duquesne the Third. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the third. Yeah.
Or the, yeah, he's the third. Yeah. And he lets slip that Jack and Eleanor are engaged, which Kate had yet to find out. And she was, I guess her mother was planning to tell her that night.
At the gala for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, why not just tell her at home? It seems like a weird place to... Yeah. Well, she already had some suspicion because she saw swords at the penthouse or whatever.
Yeah.
And she's like, what's with all the swords or whatever? And then he shows up and it's like, ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, she at least knew they were dating. She didn't necessarily, and maybe living together, but didn't know that they were engaged, you know? So it's like,
right. Yeah. Because she does not like Jack.
No.
She's still like a daddy's girl, even though he died like 10 years ago or whatever.
So, anyways, there's a, underneath the gala, there is a black market auction that, Kate follows. Was she following Armand down there, I think?
Well, yeah, because she's still an eavesdropper. She's like, yeah. She's still really good at that. She overheard Armand and her mom arguing.
Okay, yeah, that happened first. I wasn't sure.
And then He was like basically threatening her, saying like, he had like some dirt on her, I guess. And yeah,
something like, I have powerful friends too.
Right, like she was trying to explain it was like a big misunderstanding or whatever. But he's like, no, I'm gonna come after you if you don't basically fess up or whatever or something. So yeah, she's like, is this guy threatening you? And she's like, oh, I have no idea what's his problem. Like, just shrugs it off, you know, like it's no big deal. Which to her, maybe it isn't, because she might be used to this kind of thing. So we're starting to wonder, is her mom, why is she, like, because they were having money problems, you know, in the beginning of the movie, and then suddenly, well, not suddenly, but, you know, you go to 2000, well, technically it's 2025, in the story, So it's, but you know, they're rich now, so it's like, yeah, well, I mean, that's,
it's like, my theory on it is that there was like a lot of money from life insurance on the dead husband, and also probably some kind of reparations from the fact that their apartment was destroyed by the battle,
right? Probably something like that, but we'll find out if there's something shady now with her mom, or at least she's not revealing her whole self or whatever. But she goes down and she's really good at eavesdropping. So I'm like, this is a skill she definitely uses to very stealthily. She's gotten much better at it since she was a little kid, you know, overhears stuff. Good listener, which is interesting about this show, right? I don't mean to go on a tangent, but just like, I like the heroes that don't have like any superpowers in these kind of movies. Like, it's people who have to use their own cunning, their own strategy.
They should just name her literally too, like the swordsman. Like, she should just be good listening girl.
Why not? That'd be a good DC character. Good listening girl. You know? GLG. Yeah. You know? Do a comic book and like, but like, do like a G, like a capitalized G, but then do a lowercase L, but it like stands up real high, so like a cool graphic, and then it's got another G, and like have like maybe some flames or something like that. I don't know. And then, and like, yeah, it's like about Eavesdropper, who's like really, really good at eavesdropping.
Ooh, that'd be a good name for a character, though. Eavesdropper.
Oh, that's a really... And, like, that's, like, their only, like, not their only, but, like, that's, like, their main thing. But, like, they're really, they never get caught, ever. And they always come up with good, because that's the thing, you need good information. You can't just have smashy, smashy.
And her name know, is Eve Stropper, and,
yeah, yeah, the name is Eve's.
Eve Stropper.
Really on the nose, you know. Yeah.
So, anyways, she's down underneath the gala in this, black market auction that's going on down there. They auction off some kind of Chitauri thing or something from the battle first, and then they had first it was the sword of Ronin, the other identity of Clint Barton. Which I'm trying to figure out how the fuck they got these things. But anyways.
Right. Well, they always say the Ronin. Why do they say the?
I think it's just the way they refer to him in the media. It's kind of like in a lot of things they'll refer to Batman as the Batman, or you know, or it'll be the Batwoman, or the you know.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's black market shit, right? I mean, they get their hands on all kinds of stuff somehow, so you know.
Yeah.
I don't know how, but they have connections.
Yeah, so they have the Ronin's sword, which is like this really cool retractable sword that somehow retracts in to a handle that is not big enough for it to retract into. But anyways,
hey, TV convenience.
Yes. anyways, there's also being auctioned off is Ronin's costume. So that's sitting there, and then there's like a big explosion going on into the auction, and we get to meet the tracksuit mafia. They're a Russian street gang who are attempting to recover a watch among the items. While this is going on, Kate recovers Barton's Ronin suit, and then she defeats the tracksuit mafia members while wearing it. And then she escapes to her apartment after rescuing a stray dog.
While wearing the fucking suit.
Yeah.
Not very smart.
No.
But also, too, Jax takes the sword in the rubble.
Yeah.
And puts it in his pocket, retracts it, and puts it in his pocket.
Yeah.
He did say something ominous, though, about his uncle, because they were both bidding for the sword.
Yeah.
And uncle won, because he had more money, and he says, oh, you don't have 300 grand. He's like, well, I will when I might inherit it someday, or something like that. Or,
so they're that's interesting. They're really trying to paint us to think that Jax, like, the ultimate evil.
Right.
He
might be, but we don't know, you know.
Yeah, which I'll get into in speculation later. She rescues this dog, which we find out later through things is named Lucky the Pizza Dog. After that she tracks down Armand to investigate further what was going on. And she discovers that Armin has been murdered in his home.
Uh-oh.
And then she is cornered by the tracksuit mafia members after fleeing the crime scene. And then we're shown the Barton family at their hotel, where Barton sees this on the TV, all about the whole rescue and everything, the rescue of the dog and all this stuff, and sees that the Ronin is back, and he's just like, what the fuck? I'm the Ronin.
Like, damn it.
Yeah.
Well, also, too, when she was at the house, she found butterscotch candy with the Armand name on the wrapper.
Yeah. It was like monogrammed
and,
candy.
That will be important later on.
Yeah. In the next episode. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so, shit, it was the next one.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Yeah, I know. When you watch them back to back. Yeah, the...
Yeah.
So, Barton saw the news report and of the Ronin's return. And so he goes and he ends up rescuing Kate from the gangsters. And that's where our episode ends. Do you want to take a break, Matt, and we'll talk about the second episode next?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll be right back, folks.
What is Gen X? What is the Silent Generation? What do generations have in common? Hi, I'm Trish the Dish from the Gen X Voice podcast, and I invite you to listen to conversations I have with folks from different generations, backgrounds, beliefs, and experiences in an attempt to see what connects rather than divides us. Even though Gen X has been called slackers, Karens, or not mentioned at all in some cases, we are the bridge generation, so I feel compelled to do my part to destroy ageism by bringing all these voices together. And as a bonus, each guest gets to answer some 80s questions at the end of each show. So download and listen to Gen X Voice today on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And let's see how much we have in common after all.
Hi, this is Catherine, host of a new fashion podcast, The Real Fashion School Dropout. Join me as I interview guest every week in the fashion and beauty space, and we gossip on all things fashion and beauty and even get into some personal stories of their journey in the industry. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, pretty much wherever you get your podcast. Hope to see you there.
And we are back. Okay, so on to the second episode here, Matt, which premiered the same day. This was entitled Hide and Seek. It was also written by Rhys Thomas. This one was directed by Eliza Clement, C-L-I-M-E-N-T. Yes, so... We basically start where we ended in the last episode, where Barton saves Bishop and is like, who the heck are you? And rips off the masks and sees that it's, you know, a young girl, you know? So he's like, okay, what the fuck? And he takes her back to her apartment, but... they are attacked by the tracksuit mafia, who basically set the place on fire.
They tracked her down. Get it?
While wearing suits.
Yeah, get it? Tracksuit.
It suits what they do.
Ooh, I like that. Oh yeah, the other thing too, they're such like dunderheads. They're like bro.
Yeah,
like
they always say bro. I guess in the comic books they do too, so it's kind of funny that they
brought that. Yeah. Bunch of meatheads, you know.
So the pair is forced to evacuate the apartment because it's on fire. They left the Ronin suit behind.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So they need to find a place to hide out. Bishop basically takes him to her vacationing aunt's apartment. So then Clint goes and he sends his children back home, promising to return by Christmas Day. So then what happens, Matt?
He's trying to like just hurry this up so he can go home. He's not really interested in and Kate, but Kate's still kind of like awestruck, you know, like meeting her hero, or whatever.
Yeah.
She tries to teach her how to fix a wound because she got kind of cut on her forehead or whatever.
Yeah.
But again, you know, heroes who don't have any superpowers or any kind of healing powers or whatever, they have to do things the human, you know, normal way or whatever. She kind of fucks it up a little bit because they go to a Rite Aid or some kind of store like that to pick up some materials, and she's thinking like they're gonna like go to some really cool like, you know, headquarters place or whatever.
So I want to point something out about this store they went to.
Okay, sure.
Now I think only somebody like me who's worked in retail would notice some of this stuff. There's like toilet paper in the background, and it's Great Value toilet paper, which is a Walmart brand.
Okay.
And then they have like some of the supplies they get were Target brand products too.
Oh wow.
Like generic things. So whatever the generic name at Target is, I was just noticing that it looks like they went to like some stores and just bought the shit and then used it for set decoration. And I just think that's funny because I see that a lot in TV shows where, especially with Great Value stuff, it just appears like as like you'll have Great Value chips or Great Value cups or whatever, you know, in the background. It's just weird because they must not get sued for using Walmart's brand name for some reason. I don't know.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's just weird to me. But that's totally irrelevant. Anyway, so we did have a situation there with like the firemen were putting out the fire at Kate's place, and Clint goes back to try to recover the suit. While he's there, he does see he sees that the suit is gone, basically, but he does see that there's a, because he dresses up as a firefighter and goes inside, but he had taken this suit from this truck, and then he sees a little sticker on the window that says LARP New York City. So live action role play New York City. So what happens there, Matt?
Yeah, he tracks down the guy, you know, who took the suit, and he has to participate in the event just to be able to talk to the guy. They won't, you know, they won't let him just talk to him. So, he, you know, they give him like a suit of armor, a fake sword or whatever. They tell him, you know, the rules about, you know, if you get hit, you get killed, that's, you know, whatever, get hit like in the chest or whatever. So, you know, he's, you know, he's really good at fighting. So he pretty much just, you know, quote, kills all the people who are swinging their swords at him. Eventually he meets the guy and
whose name's Grills. Like,
what's that?
The guy's name is Grills. And how he found him, how he found him is he actually looked up the LARP people online and saw their social media presence and saw a video of Grills wearing the suit.
Oh yeah, that's right. Which is kind of weird because if this was a black market thing and people are looking for it, you think that like that would have like put up some like
you know, somebody like, else would have gotten into the suit first.
What's that?
You think somebody else would have gotten into the suit first before
Clint? Yeah, well not only that though, if he made a video of it, you think that people would be like looking for it like, whoa, like he's got the suit, like, you know. But again, TV convenience, I guess. Yeah. So
and I mean maybe he didn't know it was Ronan's suit.
Well, not maybe he did, but I just mean
people
who might want it.
But yeah, that, okay. That's why I was saying I thought somebody might get it before Clint does. So
yeah. So yeah, he participates, you know, he beats all the guys, he ends up meeting Grills, and you know, Grills is like really, you know, excited to meet an Avenger because apparently a lot of people like Clint. Like it's interesting because like Clint was like sort of always portrayed as like one of the minor Avengers. Like he didn't really have like the most like screen time, I guess.
Yeah.
But like apparently in public he's like one of the favorite ones of the people, you know.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, interesting. And he basically says like, hey man, like if you let me kill you in the game, I'll give you the suit.
And like it's really sad that at this point he says something like, come on man, this is the closest I'll ever have to being a hero. He's a fucking fireman.
I know.
So I'm just wondering if this is some kind of commentary by the writers on how we view our actual first responders, you know?
Well, that too, but just like how, you know, people worship superheroes in this universe, they actually have.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to imagine putting yourself in the perspective of, like, in this world, like, these people exist. Like it's not, like, it's not watching, like, a TV, like, a movie. Yeah. Like, in this world, they know that Thor is a real person.
But it's like, funny, too, though, like, in our real world, even, people worship, like, DC and Marvel characters or people they see on TV, even just celebrities. It's kind of like, I think, the whole thing that, like The Boys is trying to point out, you know, where we put certain people on pedestals, but they're not necessarily the heroes we should be worshiping, when it should actually be, in my opinion, people like, you know, your EMTs and your firefighters and shit like that, you know, that are risking their lives. And I'm not, you know, don't get me started on cops. They got issues themselves, but I'm saying, like, the good cops that actually are doing their job where they're protecting people, they should be treated like heroes as opposed to, you know,
celebrity. Yeah. You know, whatever. Yeah.
But, yes. So he basically has to lose to Grills in this battle, which he does, so he can get the suit back. Then what happens, Matt?
But he's got to make it look natural, though. You know, it's got to be. So he loses. And then he gets his suit back. I think he comes back to the apartment and he fixes Kate's wound because she didn't really clean it the correct way or whatever.
Yeah.
So he wanted to make sure that doesn't get infected, because he's like, you'll really be, you know, sad in a week, or if it gets infected, or you're going to have a bad week or whatever. And he tells her to stay put. Of course, she doesn't listen to him, and she ends up forgot. See, I only watched this one once. I saw the other episode twice.
So she ends up going to I believe it's like the place of the security company that her mom runs, which I think is interesting. She goes there and she runs into Eleanor and Jack, and she tries to convince Eleanor that Duquesne had something to do with his uncle's death. So then she challenges Jack to a fencing duel.
Oh God.
Which he keeps letting her win. Which was kind of like, it's like you can't tell if he's doing that to be, you know, an asshole, or if he's doing it as to try to win her over, or what, you know, because it's like that thing where, oh, you know, your new stepdad is trying to be your friend, sort of thing, you know.
Exactly. We don't really, Jack, his character is very good at not really showing his cards too much.
Yeah, it's like they really want us to think he's the bad guy. So
he might be, but it could also be a complete misdirection too. He could actually be swordsman, like a real one. Like,
yeah,
yeah.
So, because, like, we'll get into speculation in a minute here. So,
I always forget about that. We have speculation during these episodes.
Yeah.
The TV one.
Yeah. So after the little duel, she tries to contact Barton, not knowing that he has actually allowed himself to be captured by the tracksuit mafia. She tracks down his location using, like, security systems and stuff from her family's company. Then she ends up being captured herself. And then the gang informs their boss, who's named Maya Lopez, of Barton and Bishop's capture. Maya Lopez, who is a character in the comic books named Echo.
Yep. And they're gonna have a show about her coming out too.
So basically her ability is she's basically has like a photographic memory sort of thing for being able to copy kind of like Taskmaster in the Black Widow movie.
Yeah.
Where she can actually, she's a deaf person, but she's able to notice things visually really well because of that. And so yeah. She can, like if, you know, if she sees Clint fighting, she can mimic his fighting style exactly, you know?
Yeah, so, which is pretty interesting. Plus, too, isn't she a Daredevil character? So they might be bringing in like
show. There's an interesting thing in the comics. She was actually raised by Kingpin.
Oh wow!
So there's a lot of speculation right now, which we'll get to here in a second. We can just talk about speculation now. We'll just jump into that right now.
So yeah, we keep going.
Yeah. So basically. A lot of speculation is going. There's a lot of rumors going around right now that Kingpin might appear in this show as one of the ultimate baddies. Vince D'Onofrio, who played Kingpin on the Daredevil Netflix series, he tweeted out a video about this show saying how excited he was for this show, which is really weird because he doesn't really do that for much, so.
Yeah.
So, might be, you know, maybe he is just truly excited because he likes the character of Hawkeye or something.
Yeah,
Or maybe he's involved in it. Who knows? We'll see. So.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we don't know. But,
basically, I guess in the comics, Maya Lopez was raised by Kingpin, was a bad person for a while, and then ended up becoming good. So, and then she was like a member of the Young Avengers. So,
okay,
yeah. So we'll see where they take this character in this show, and if she's gonna have her own show, I have a feeling she's gonna end up being a good guy. You know, so
yeah, maybe. Well, it seems like that's what's being set up, I think, from, because like you had, you know, with WandaVision, you had Wiccan and Speed, yeah. Which were, end up becoming part of the Young Avengers, and then you've now got, it looks like Valentina's creating her Thunderbolts organization, or team, or whatever, yeah. So it does seem like.
And you got,
either they're really just doing the misdirection, which would kind of suck because it would blow out anyone's like excitement, but it does seem like that's what's kind of being set up here. Yeah, because
like Kate Bishop was a member of the Young Avengers as well, and so right. Yeah. And so is, I believe, Miss Marvel, who's got her own show coming out soon too. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, probably a couple years down the line, we're gonna have a Young Avengers movie or something.
Yeah.
So, any other speculation on your part?
I think the relationship, you know, between Kate and Clint's going to get a little bit closer. Cause because right now she hasn't really told him like that, like he literally saved her life. Like she witnessed saving her life when she was like 10 years old or whatever.
Yeah.
So, well, no, I think she's more like 8 or 9, because this takes place, because technically Hawkeye takes place in 2025, the end of 2025.
Yeah.
So we're going into 2026.
So, I mean, I don't think she disappeared during the blip, so, because there's no indication of that, so she would be, so it would be like 2012. Till 25, how old would that make her?
Wait, Kate disappeared in the blip? They said that?
No, she didn't. I said there's no indication that she did. Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, so yeah, 2012, because she's 22 in the show. She said she was 22. So 12, that's 13 years. 22 minus 13, I'm terrible at math. She'd be about 9 at that time.
So yeah, but, she'd been 9 and during the Battle of New York. So, yeah.
So, I think at some point, they're probably going to get into an argument because he's going to be resentful that he has to, like, clean up her mess. And I think at some point, though, she's going to, like, you know, reveal why she wants, because, like, she always wears purple and stuff, too. That's kind of like Hawkeye's color, so yeah. She's always trying to mimic him, like, throughout her whole life, basically.
Yeah, and so she's probably going to end up becoming, of course, the new Hawkeye or something of that variation, which I believe she does in the comics. So, also, I think that they're being really heavy-handed in making us think that Jack's a bad guy.
Yeah, like, it seems almost too convenient. Like, he might be a bad guy, but I don't know if he's the bad guy.
And I also, my thing is I don't even necessarily think he might be smarmy, but he's not necessarily doing things for a bad reason. You know, like, he's not, like, evil. He's more like a opportunist, maybe, you know?
Yeah, and also, too, he does seem like he somewhat bucks the family tradition of being, like, wealthy, because, like,
yeah.
It seems like Armand is, like, the reason why he's upset is, like, to him, it almost seems like he's marrying down, like, he should be marrying.
That's the other thing that did we bring up the point that, you know, that monogrammed candy, butterscotch, he actually had one, so that makes it kind of seem like he would have been in. You know, that's another way that they're trying to be like, hey, look at this guy, look at this guy. And that just seems, like, a little bit too convenient.
Like, yeah, he gave her the candy and, like, he looked at her and, like, she thinks that he's, like, telling her a message that he knows that he saw her. Well, because, like, when he saw her when she was dressed up as Ronin, and, you know, you can usually tell what someone looks like by their eyes if you know them well enough. Like, so they were pretty close up to each other. So, like, he might have recognized it was her. Not so much that he thinks that she's Ronin, but that maybe she just put on the costume during the whole thing.
You know? I think if they were smart, they would somehow make him... Because I think definitely Eleanor is up to something.
She might be, like, one of the higher-ups. Who knows? Yeah, like,
I think she killed her husband.
Yeah, because she said she was going to go downstairs.
Yeah.
And then the crash happened, so she couldn't just use that as an excuse to kill him and go, oh, well, the Chitauri, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
So, because in the comics, the father is actually a bad guy.
And the
mother dies. So,
interesting.
They switched things up for this. So that makes me think, that she's going to be a bad guy. So
it would make sense, because she, like, was like, daddy's girl, like always had, like, a more special relationship with him, and she got, quote, not stuck with her, but, like, her mom wasn't, like, her favorite parent, basically.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
But I guess she had in the comics, the way that it goes is, like, the dad's a bad guy, had faked the mom's death or something, and then she ends up coming back to life or something, so it's just, you know, how comics go.
Yeah, just, like, so, held her captive or something? Like,
I don't remember. I'd have to look it up. Okay. But I read something about it a while back, so I was just like... Interesting. Yeah. So I'd have to look it up. But, but we'll see where that goes. I think definitely Eleanor's up to something, and my thing is, I think it'd be interesting if Jack just turns out to be a good guy. Like, he's just being overly coming off smarmy because he's trying to win over Kate's affections because he's going to be her stepdad, you know?
Right, yeah. And who knows, maybe this might be the version where he actually was Clint's mentor, and then eventually they're going to end up meeting each other, and it's like, wait a minute, like, you're involved with this, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Well, there is a scene, I think, for the next episode that's, it looks like they're like, Clint and Kate are, like, sitting at a table in front of her mom and Jack, like, they're talking to each other, so I don't know if that's the next episode or what.
Yeah,
and
haven't seen, like, any previews myself, so, yeah. Right. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, okay, folks, well, just let us know what you think is going to happen. You know, comment on our videos anywhere that they're shared on social media. Love to hear what you have to say. Also, you can email me at mike@cullenpark.com and let us know what you think there. Anything else, Matt, before we wrap things up?
Nope, that's all.
Okay, so folks, make sure you're good to each other. You know, do good things, and good things will happen. Do bad things, and bad things will happen. Those are words to live by, Matt.
Yeah.
So, you know, follow us on social media. Go to all2real2.com for all that info. Check out our TeePublic, our Patreon. Give us a 5-star review if you can, anywhere you can. Also, you know, share the show with your friends. That's the best way to get us out there. And until next time, folks, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to All Too Real 2 Podcast, a Cullen Park production. Produced and edited by Michael E. Cullen II. Music by Matthew Hawes. Subscribe and share the show. Visit us at cullenpark.com.